Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And quite literally, get in. Welcome. We are living the hybrid dream. We are streaming live as we speak to Facebook and YouTube. Can we give a big hurrah for that? Way! And welcome to, this is history in the making. This is the inception point where we get going with the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, as a live theatre show, simultaneously living the hybrid dream and broadcasting to the World Wild Web. I called it the World Wild Web there, which is not normally called. So this is an inaugural show. Thank you for being here, and thank you for watching on Facebook and YouTube if you are. And I'm delighted to welcome the first ever guest for the trailblazing quest of whether this will work as a theatre show too. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome Kate Cross, MBE.
Great.
I'm going to embrace you. I hope you don't mind.
I just managed to drop my microphone right at the very beginning.
Well done. It's all wonderful.
Let me just slip it back on my belt.
So Kate will now slip it back on her belt as we sit down in new director's chairs, which are a bit like we're going on safari through the clearing. You'll see what's going on here. So Kate Cross, MBE.
Hi.
MBE.
Yes.
And that's an acronym that's going to keep on giving because I'm calling it My Beautiful Egg.
Oh, that's much better.
MBE. Because you were given a gong for services to Children's Theatre 2018. And congratulations, because this is you are the curator of the egg, which is why I was particularly excited to speak to you. So you're extremely welcome.
Thank you, Chris.
So how's morale? What's your story of the day, first of all?
What's my story of the day?
Yes.
Oh, Lord. Went to Pilates.
Lovely.
Did the shopping. Went home. Booked a few tickets to see some plays.
You're a normal person.
Read my book.
Yep.
About slavery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So is that an average day in the life of Kate?
Well, no, it's not an average day. It's an average Friday morning.
And the book on slavery on a Friday morning?
When I've managed to find tiny little windows of opportunity to read my book, yes.
Lovely. So you are extremely welcome. It's going to be my absolute joy and pleasure to curate you through the storytelling scape. It's going to be a clearing. You have been kind enough to prepare what your clearing is, but I don't know what it is until you tell me.
Okay.
Then I'm going to arrive with a tree in your clearing. I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. I've got a sort of bag of tricks here, so I might even get out, you know, how do you like these apples? Some comedy props as we go through. There's also going to be some Shakespeare, a couple of random squirrels, and a cake. As well.
Great. It's clear
Wonderful.
As water.
So, just to blow a bit of happy smoke, just to contextualise, we met and we've got history, I think, circa 1993. So, it's a happy 30th anniversary.
Oh, we're the flowers.
Hurrah! And that was because I was at the Salisbury Playhouse doing Custer's Last Stand. Yep. You were working in the education department there. And then you started here in 1998 as head of education.
More or less.
More or less. Mm. And then what I liked as well is the idea you've got a sort of curated journey of about 7 years as a sort of life cycle, because 2005 is when, the curator of the egg, the idea was born, and here you are. So a Lenin quote says there are decades where nothing happens and weeks where decades happen. And I'm aware that you said that there was a snatched conversation of about 40 minutes with Danny Moore back in the day when the idea for the Egg Theatre was born. So do you want to just tell us about that?
Oh, OK. Yes, that's my story, the story of the egg. So, yeah, I'd only been here for about, less than a year. And I got a call from Danny, who's the director of the Theatre Royal, Bath. And he said, do you want to come down to my office? Which was, like, at that point, a fairly terrifying request. I thought I'd done something wrong. You know, I thought I was going to get into trouble.
Headmaster's office,
obviously,
yes.
I don't feel like that anymore. I don't have any of those triggers anymore. But, you know, back then I did, yeah. And so I went down and he said, Yeah, we're thinking, the board is thinking of doing like a big fundraising push, and the education department would seem to be a good outlet for fundraising, good opportunity. So he said to me, everything that anybody ever wishes, he said, so if your budget tripled overnight, what would you spend it on? And he said, now you go away and have a think about it, get back to me tomorrow and next week or whatever, and you know, let's have a chat. So I said, well, I don't need to go away and think about that. And he said, well, why is that? And I said, well, I'd buy that cinema next door that's up for sale or going to soon be up for sale and turn it into a dedicated theatre space for children and young people. And he said, oh, okay, well, you know. Well,
you said that there and then.
I said it right there and then. I didn't even know it was coming. I mean, I had no idea it was coming. I didn't even know it was inside my head. That's the weirdest. Yes. It's really weird. And then he said, so, okay, go on, tell me why. And so then I started sort of speaking in tongues. Again, completely unprepared, but obviously unprepared is always one's most authentic self.
Yeah.
And at the time, you may recall, any of the education work that happened in this building happened in the Ustinov, which was a sort of previous design anyway.
A sort of black, cold box,
sort of black,
I remember.
Very, very long, cold box with terrible sight lines, particularly for children at that time.
Yeah.
whenever we programmed a play at the Theatre Royal for young audiences, it always sort of arrived in a car, parked up on the double yellow lines, a sort of suitcase came out. They kind of put a little set up on top of the set for the evening show.
Yeah.
And then we'd wheel all these children in and they couldn't see, you know, and that was the offer. And it sort of struck me that this was, lacking in equality. And, you know, I sort of asked myself a question, if all this wonderful quality work is happening in the main house and all this quality work is happening in the Ustinov and adults can make choices week by week by week about what kind of work they want to go and see, why on earth wouldn't you be able to do that for children? So presumably that's what I said.
So there's this weird dilemma whereby it was one of the most plush receiving houses in the country, the Theatre Royal Bath.
Yeah.
And then for want of a better word, a slightly crappy dark freezer box was what the offer was for children's theatre.
Yes. I mean, it wasn't a bad theatre. It was just the fact that the programme within it was for adults and there was no space left or held in the programme for children's work. And I think things have changed, and that practice doesn't happen anymore. But I mean, that was happening in Salisbury as well.
Yeah.
When you and I met, you know, we were, I don't know if you remember that triangular bar on the first floor, but we used to sort of put loads of black drapes up over the windows and sort of stick a thing there as though to say, this is a stage, and then bring loads of families in and put them all on the beer stained carpet and ask them to enjoy a puppet show.
Yes.
It was not a nice experience. And I think all of those memories just like fed into that beautiful, wonderful golden moment where I had the opportunity to do something about it.
And you mentioned the golden moment. It's like that's the laying of the golden egg.
It was the laying of the golden egg, yeah. I gave you that one.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was listening
at
that point.
Good.
And so one of the best ways to get a job for life is to build a building and then sit in it.
That's true.
So I congratulate you for being the curator of the egg. And in fact, 2018, coming, you know, several years later, that was what the MBE was for. It was for, you know, services to children's theatre.
Correct.
Which is, and who did you get given the gong by, just while we sort of dwell on that for a moment?
I always forget all their names. William, I think. William.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That must have been one of his first outings, I'll wager,
no,
probably.
No, he looked pretty experienced. Looked bored. I was number 254 that day, I think, you know.
So cashier number, 412, please, is Kate Cross who comes in. Lovely. So, what it says up the stairs now on the way into the Egg Theatre, there's a lovely photograph which just says, behind every smile is a story. And so this has become a place of really good curated joy.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Well, joy, and joy in the broadest sense.
Yes.
You know, crying can also bring joy, right? So it's not just about kind of pure, happy, clappy entertainment. You know, joy comes from feeling connected or feeling like somebody's speaking something to you or speaking some truth, which could actually make you cry or could make you feel unsettled, but in the sense that you are sharing that with other people can then bring joy. So it's not unbridled joy, I would say.
Yes.
I don't think that's my
job. So it's the whole gamut of human emotion, which is what theatre is obviously at its best.
Yeah, exactly, that's right. And I wouldn't limit that for children just because they're children. That's very, very important to me. But hard to hold up.
Yes. I also loved it when you said that you were stood in front of Danny Moore back in the day, full of imposter syndrome, going, then you came up with an ingenious idea.
Yes, that was lucky, wasn't it?
And then overnight, what happened?
Overnight, what happened? Did you, Overnight, what happened? He had a board meeting that evening, and then the next morning he phoned me up in my office and said, right, so we had a board meeting last night, and the board have put an offer on for Robin's Cinema. And it was like, hello, what? And he said, yeah, we're going to buy it. So, and then we were off. We were away researching children's theatres all over the world. And
have you spoken to Danny Moore since and spoken often about
that
moment?
No, I haven't spoken to him since. Not a word has passed either of our lips.
Yes, we ignore each other now, but I've got the theatre, I'm sitting in it, I've got a job for life.
He's got his, I've got mine, we're all happy.
Yes.
No, I'm joking.
Of course.
Have I? No. No, I don't believe I have, actually. I'll do that next time.
And it's extraordinary that obviously he saw that humongous potential in you because he's the one you asked, and then
yeah, I guess so.
Your vision became a dream,
yeah,
and here we are.
But I don't want to give any spoiler alerts away because my quirky fact.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
So, well done. Let's get on now to the curated journey. So it's my great pleasure to welcome you here. And also, sincerely thanks to you, 30 years on, this is an inception point, which is very exciting for me. You have taken a punt on giving this a go, which I'm extremely grateful to you for. So what goes around comes around. And this is, for me, one of those moments where, you know, decades where nothing happens and then weeks where decades happen. This is a very exciting launch point for me, too.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you for being
here. Great. Well, good luck.
I thank you all. So, Kate Cross, MBE, and by the way, I've already said my beautiful egg.
Yep.
You can have that as your gift. Where is a clearing for you? Where do you get to go clutter-free, inspirational and able to think to get you on the open road of the structure of the podcast?
Yeah, well, the open road is almost it. The answer to that question is a train. And I thought about this, you know, because I like moving. I just like the motion of moving. But I thought I couldn't give you the answer walking because it's a bit too slow and the scenery doesn't change quickly enough. And I definitely couldn't give you the analogy of being on a plane because that's just torture.
Too fast.
Well, it's just torture and trauma,
yeah,
you know, for the whole time. I mean, I just think I'm going to crash the whole time. So that's not a happy place at all. It's not a car because I'm busy cultivating road rage most of the time that I'm in a car. So it's not
good
a car.
Good point. Yeah.
So
very good point.
So a train is a place where you kind of, you know, rightly or wrongly, your brain tells you you're safe, and you give over of yourself. You know, you give everything up, and all the kind of clutter and messiness of everyday life somehow gets left behind. Kind of literally, it kind of gets sucked like a vacuum out of your brain.
Lovely. Yeah.
And then I get into this beautiful space where scenery is moving past fast enough to kind of keep me feeling like there's some momentum. And I don't know whether that's true, but that's the only way I can describe this, which is why I went through these other moving
The safety thing's really interesting, right, isn't it? Because it's somebody about 300 feet away is driving it and worried about what's on the track, whereas you can sit back and just let go.
Yeah, just give of myself to the moment. And so long as nobody's around me is smells or eating a McDonald's or something, then it can be, which on the 11 o'clock back from Paddington is not the case.
So that's not your happy place.
That's not my happy train, no.
The Midnight Express from Paddington.
Oh, it's horrid, it's vile.
We've all done it.
Mm-hmm. And so there's actually a joke between members of my team and myself, which is, oh no, Kate's going on a train. because I have all my ideas on the train, and I've had most of my best ideas on a train journey. And I have to say, I'd like to say that, you know, my clearing is the, you know, the Bernina Express or the Orient Express or something, but quite frankly, the Bath to Paddington does it for me. You know, roundabout Didcot, I'm feeling great.
I love that. Roundabout Didcot, I'm feeling great. That's the gold we're after. I was going to ask about the sort of Michael Portillo, Michael Palin-esque sort of, you know, train journeys of the world, but you've said that basically it's the Bath to Paddington Didcot Express.
It doesn't really have to be that lavish. But
and what I like is it's specific and it's regional as well, and it's your happy place. So if I may now, I'm going to comically arrive with a tree in your clearing. So I'm sort of struggling up the centre gangway of the Larkspur Express to Paddington Didcot Parkway. And they've since collapsed those cooling towers, haven't they, at Didcot Park?
Gosh,
I think they've gone.
God, I haven't even noticed.
Well, look out the window occasionally.
Okay,
I think maybe they've gone.
No, I'm sure you're right.
Yeah. The cooling towers. So here we are. I'm going to arrive with a tree, and now we're going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out.
Yeah.
So this is where you've been kind enough. Your second bit of preparation is you've had 5 minutes, or as long as you've needed since I first told you you were doing this and you said yes, to have thought about four things that have shaped you.
Yeah.
Three things that inspire you, and then two things that never fail to grab your attention, and that's where the random squirrels come in.
Well,
squirrels, and we've got two squirrels, no extra charge, you're welcome. And then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So may I present you with an apple?
Oh, thank you very much,
your first
Chris.
Metaphor. So four things that have shaped you, Kate Cross.
Other than my diet.
Ha ha.
So glad I got that one in.
Hang on.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, four things that have shaped me. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Because you're shaped like you say, all the time. But it's impossible not to say that we're shaped by a family.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and in particular, one's parents. And if I try and kind of work out what it is about my parents that shaped me, other than, you know, I'm still alive.
They gave you good genetic survival.
And I don't think I've murdered anyone, so I think the moral code was more or less in place.
But you thought about it when you were road raging, but that it's just
yes, exactly,
in your own car.
Yeah.
The kingdom of our car.
And I think the really interesting thing about my mother is that I definitely was introduced to theatre by my mother, who was a keen member of the local amateur dramatic company. And I remember when I was involved in one of the probably Christmas pantomimes, and I was in possibly in the sick form, actually, and I was umming and ahhing about whether to do it or not, because I'd also been offered a part in the school play, and I was like hedging my bets. And she said to me something along the lines of, when you're in a play, Kate, you make a complete commitment to it. You can't half do anything. And if I think about my MO now, I think I definitely got that from her, whether that was as a piece of advice or whether it's just in our
gene. Is what you mean by
yes, I'm so sorry.
Sorry, I was just making sure I understood the MO.
So I think that notion of the sort of 100% commitment to something, like I'm going to do something, therefore I'm going to do it, you know, was something I very much got from her, not least of all the fact that, you know, I had an introduction to being part of making plays and being on stage and, you know, being part of a theatre community, I suppose. But the other thing about my mother was that she passed away back in September at age 92. So she was born in 1930.
This September just gone?
Yes, that's right. And so she was, she turned 14 when the Education Act came out.
Wow.
Which basically meant that because of her gender and her class and the war, she left school at the age of 14. And she was such an intelligent, authentic and brilliant woman. She had so much insight and intellect and interest and reflectiveness about the world and in the world, and barely did a day's paid work in her life. You know, the expectation for her was that she'd leave school. She did a job when she first left school in the telephone exchange in Chichester in Sussex, and she continued to talk about that because it really was only her only job that she ever had. And then she got married at the age of 21. Her mother died 6 weeks later, and then she started having children, and then she was a stay-at-home mother. And there's nothing wrong with that, but for the fact that, well, when she split up with my father, she was slightly kind of, well, now what? And she didn't, and her children were growing up, and she didn't really have a career to fall back on. And it has always been our, you know, when I say our, I mean mine and my siblings' greatest regret, really, that she never had the opportunity to express herself in a workplace, because I think she could have done something quite extraordinary.
She was truly wise and a great enabler of all you all became.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. But very unexpressed, I think, you know, in terms of, I mean, she did lots of voluntary work and all sorts of stuff in her local community, but yeah, very unexpressed. And I think that, like, you know, there is generations of work and hard work. And, you know, I've got a 21-year-old daughter who's of the generation that doesn't really believe in work, which is, you know, kind of a refreshing idea. It's quite interesting because, you know, I feel as though I got my work ethic, and my work ethic is something I like. You know, I'm not, I work very, very hard, and I enjoy working very, very hard, and it sort of defines me. And she just looks at me and thinks, why would you do this much work? You know, but I think the reason why I do this much work is because my mother couldn't.
Ah, yes. Yes. And the sort of MO you mentioned, you know, Rome isn't built in a day, the commitment you must have needed to get the egg from inception to completion, that was a 7-year quest, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the most patient I've ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah. A play, you know, a play takes, what, 1 to 2 years to make, and that's quite hard.
Yes.
But 7 years, whoa.
And your father in the mix of that as well?
My father in the mix of that, much less present in my life, as lots of fathers of that generation were.
Yeah.
But an entrepreneur. And I think a sort of bit of a ducker and a diver, and I think I'm a ducker and a diver. And there's a sort of another running gag in our office.
Maybe there are some people that will attest to this, please.
When we're in the pub, I don't know who's out there, when we're in the pub, where when we've had a couple of drinks, I do the proverbial, want to buy a play? Want to buy a play? I've got some lovely plays here. Anybody want to play? So, yeah, I think I got my entrepreneurial drive and nous and spirit, risk-taking spirit from him. And my sort of, if I've got any integrity, then I got it from my mum.
And I suppose the gender stereotype is that he probably died before. Sorry if he's still alive, I didn't mean
anything. No, he did die before, yeah, yes. That's right, yeah.
Because it tends to be the mothers that go on to be the sort of great...
Yes, the matriarchs.
The matriarchs.
Yeah. And, and of course, they end up being the people that you have known longer than anybody else.
Yes.
And so, whatever, you know, obviously we all have very complex and interesting relationships with our parents.
Yeah.
But when they die, it's that, isn't it? It's like, God, I've not known anybody longer than I've known you.
Yes.
And I don't know anybody better than I knew you. You know, and yes. That's a funny thing to lose.
And I suppose the matriarch thing is very interesting as well, because, you know, again, not to come back to the architecture of this building, but you become the sort of matriarch of the egg because you're here as a constant presence within it.
Yes, I mean, that analogy has been used quite a lot of times, because when we opened in 2005, I was profoundly pregnant with my second child, and words like wombs and eggs and mother hen and all of that kind of stuff were quite prolific.
And it sort of kept on giving, because one of the committees and steerings, I know it's called the Fuse team, but it was also, you were using the word incubate quite a lot as well, I
guess. Yes.
By the way, I did remember I had forgotten to give you your own slide, so there you
yes.
are. You're here anyway.
That was a photo that was taken last week.
You look the same to me. It just looks like you've got a nice white light there, which is lovely. Very angelic,
very
if
good.
I may say so.
Thank you very much.
So that's shapeage number one.
Oh, Lord.
Which is your mum.
Yep.
And then your dad's less prevalent in the same way of influencing.
Yep.
What about shapeage number two, please? Which shapeage is cashier number two.
Thank you very much. I mean, I guess that's my education. And it's funny, isn't it? Because you'd think, oh, yes, an education, that's what shapes you. You know, you go and do the subjects and you do your exams and that gets you to wherever you go and that's what shapes you. But it's not that, is it? It's never that. It's the experience that you have whilst you're doing that.
Absolutely.
That actually shapes you, which is the great sort of the great lie that we all, you know, carried through life with us. And I, because of my father, not my mother, obviously, but because of my father's sort of family tradition was, I don't want to say sent to a boarding school, but I went to a boarding school. My brother, both my siblings are older than me, and they both went to a boarding school, and I felt left out, actually. So I thought, well, if they can go to a boarding school, I can too, because obviously the only image I had of boarding school was the Enid Blyton version.
Ah, yes.
Anyway, and boarding school was actually not that very far away from here. Because I didn't grow up near here. And in the
because Sussex is where you were born.
No,
right?
I wasn't. I was born in Ascot in Berkshire. Oh,
okay. Did I make that up? Somebody was from Sussex.
My mum's from Sussex. That's right. You're right about that.
Yeah.
She, yeah. Anyway, So this boarding school, I just thought it was a very, very ironic situation because, you know, parents pay quite a lot of money for boarding schools, and I actually don't think I had a very good education.
Right.
It's the 1970s, it's a girls' boarding school. The main aspirate, unless you were like a hyper genius and could do Latin and Greek from the age of 2 years onwards, you were being sort of primed to be a well-behaved lady, which, you know, they utterly signally failed at with me right from day one. It wasn't going to happen. And I was I don't want to say I was very rebellious. I wasn't really very naughty because there was also a bit of me that didn't like getting told off.
Yeah.
But I was it was all a nonsense. Yeah. Everything was nonsense to me there. You know, it's like there were rules that just made absolutely no sense. There was no logic to them. It was just power being yielded. Yeah. It was, as I now know, you know, the fear of teenagers that adults have. And the only way they can overcome that fear is to kind of wield these kind of rules.
To contain
and sort of powerful,
it, yes.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't know that at the time. It just felt like nonsense to me at the time. All these ridiculous rules and things that were just kind of limiting my own expression and my own experience of life.
And by balking at the conformity, though, what comes about is the fact you're an outlier, because most of our favourite theatre practitioners are outliers because they've broken free of the conformity somehow and swim against the stream.
Yeah, that's right. And also, the actual act of being educated didn't work for me either. Like, you know, at university, I remember a lecturer saying to me, the reason why you didn't do very well in this essay is it's got too many of your own opinions in it, Kate, and not enough of other people's. And I'm going, well, what's wrong with my opinions?
Pardon me for having
I've had
a brain.
Some really amazing insights here. And it's going, no, we don't want to know. And obviously, once you then end up working in the arts, people do want to know what you're feeling and what you're thinking, because that's what art is. Art is like digging into the truth of like humanity.
And the rest of society is gagging for innovation and creativity. And how do we do that then? Which is when they look to theatre.
But that just didn't work for me at school because I couldn't put myself in that box really.
Yeah.
So
balking at conformity is a sort of way of
balking at definitely, that's for sure. And and so I think that extraordinarily weird experience of the adults that were quote unquote looking after us at that boarding school is, I'm fairly certain, is what gave me my complete obsession with childhood, which, you know, has stayed with me forever. So I'd say it's very, very shaping because, yes, education and what education is and what it means to people is one thing. Childhood and what that means is another, and also gender. I think, you know, my feminism probably started to get born when I was in this girls' boarding school thinking, why are the boys' boarding schools better than the girls'?
Mm-hmm. Shapage number three, please.
Yes. This is a bit of a cop-out, but like...
there are no cop-outs.
All the failures in our lives, right? So I don't even know if I can particularly name any, but every time you fail, you get shaped, don't you? And it's like now that I've learned how to fail and learned not to sort of beat myself up and think that my life is never going to carry on as a result of having done this, you know, failing thing, now I know that life does go on, and like, not only does it go on, it goes on better.
Yes.
And so failures are moments of sheer joy and opportunity and possibility, aren't they? It's like you've messed something up, nearly swore there. You've messed something up, and this is the opportunity to sort of, as Beckett says, fail better. You know,
yes,
sort of like
fail better.
Sort of put it all back together again and do something better and more rigorous next time. You know, one's failures are kind of one's risks in a way, aren't they? And life without risk is not really worth living. So I would say that all the times I've failed, and we do it, we micro fail every 10 minutes.
We do.
And we macro fail, you know, quite a lot as well, you know. So
I like that, micro failure.
Yeah, thanks.
All shaping.
So, yeah, I would say all of those failures are very, very shaping and really, really important.
And someone I really rate and admire talks about when shit happens in life, it's called plot twist, and then it's just how you adapt and flex and what you do next.
Yeah.
Because it ain't over until it's over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sadly.
So
That was my cop-out one. Was
That didn't sound like a cop-out to me. Did we think that was a cop-out? No, we didn't. No. So now, shapeage number four, please.
Shapeage number four. Shapeage number four is just bath.
Okay.
So bath and this, obviously. So when I came to Bath, despite three fairly pleasant years at Salisbury Playhouse, as you've mentioned, I would have described myself then and still do as being sort of wandering in the wilderness a bit. I'd kind of moved around from sort of lived in Dorset and Somerset and North Devon for quite a while, in Yorkshire and Kent, moved around, sort of gone to jobs, sort of left, been freelance, which actually meant unemployed, and really didn't know where I was going. And when I came here, I came here as a freelancer, and an opportunity came up for me to take a full-time job, and I took it.
And when you say here, you mean this building?
Theatre Royal Bath, before the Egg was built, Royal Bath. And I took a job here and moved here. Simultaneously, my partner at the time moved over from Holland and came to live here as well. So it very much was a moment of, oh, we're settling down. You know, this is a place to put roots
down. I'm assuming you went Dutch.
Ha ha ha. That was bad.
That was bad. Yeah, we can delete that later. That's fine. Okay. We can edit that out.
I think you said it was live.
Hashtag awkward. Yeah. So there you are. So you found a
home. Here I'm in Bath. Yeah. And and I can't really explain this, because not everything about the Theatre Royal Bath is like everything I ever wanted in life. It's sort of run in a very different way from how I now work here. But I described the experience of starting the job here as I've finally come home. And I really, really felt like I'd come home. Mm. And you know, I mean, I know we can laugh about Bath and all the rest of it, and it's a bit of a bubble and all of that, but that's what it is. It's a place where I feel as though I have been given permission to be myself. And I feel as though the general kind of value system across Bath sort of chimes with my own, and which is, you know, giving permission to be creative and to take risks and to be bold and to have a voice and to take up space and all of those things.
And very lovely to hear that somebody who's felt like an outlier for a lot of that time suddenly finds somewhere that's a home for an outlier.
Yeah, I really did. And I just suddenly fell into a much more sort of confident me that, you know, was then able to move forward and do this.
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
But it ain't over yet. Okay, now we're going to talk about three things that inspire you. So, over to you.
Okay.
We're still in the foliage of the tree, just to let you know about the structure.
Okay. Okay, three things that inspire me. Beautifully written sentences inspire me. I don't know why.
Think you've written yourself?
No, that other people have written. So, on those rare moments when I, you know, find a little chink in my day to read, which I love to do, I've been known to literally jump out of the chair and start skipping around the room at the sight of a sentence that just literally, beautifully puts words together into such a beautifully formed thing.
Lovely.
And goes, just like strikes right into your heart and your head, and you go, yes, yes, yeah. And I take a little photo of it, and then, you know, nothing happens to
it. No pressure, but is there a recent sentence that you'd like to proffer?
No, that's too much pressure. Actually, I did look through my photos. It would take me too long to find it now. And it was from a book by Sarah Winman, which I recently read, called Still Life, which is heartily recommend. It sort of is set in Italy and London, and includes an awful lot about Italian art, and so therefore talks about art a lot. And there's some beautiful sentences in there which are really sort of life-affirming about why we love the arts and why we're engaged in the arts. And yeah, that was the last one I saw. But Sebastian Faulks has the capacity, just the way he uses language when I read his work, just to make me go weak at the knees.
Beautifully put. Lovely. Second inspiring?
My second thing that inspires me is planning holidays.
Ah, yes.
So back to the train. I love going on holiday, but I think I prefer planning them to going on them. And there was a period during 2020 and 2021 where, I'm not joking, I couldn't remember which holidays I've been on and which ones have been cancelled, because once I'd booked them, I really had lived them.
Like, yes, you've done the itinerary.
I've done the itinerary.
On day four, we'll be here.
I've kind of felt the thing.
Yeah.
I've done the bit that I enjoy, which is playing around with maps and routes and ways of travelling and ways of being and, you know, and joining the dots and working it all out and making a sort of perfect. Like, I don't live every minute of it. I don't think, right, I'm going to eat this meal in this restaurant and then I'm going to buy that thing from that shop. Don't get that granular. I leave enough space inside the sort of scaffolding.
There's room for spontaneity. Yeah,
there's room for, obviously.
Once you've clamped us all into where we're going, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, you got it, yeah. And I know what the walks are going to be.
Of course you do.
And we're probably going to march to the top of a mountain.
So it's still Enid Blyton somewhere in there.
Yeah. Afraid so. But yeah, I just love to do the planning.
Very good.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay.
That inspires me.
Very good. Next.
Risk inspires me.
So it's the board game?
It's not. No. That's a vile game, isn't it?
It's
horrible. No, like all sorts of risk, actually. I mean, I know I've mentioned risk before, but it really does. It gets me sort of salivating, actually, watching other people taking risk. And that could be all the TikTok acrobatic reels that I spend far too much of my time watching acrobatics on TikTok.
No one can relate to
that. I should be reading my book, looking for another perfectly formed sentence. But no, I'm looking at the acrobatics on TikTok. Or it could be, other really simple things, like somebody just taking an initiative, you know, like some friends from, well, sort of half friends from the primary school world, you know, when my children were still at primary school, set up a supper club in our village or in our area where it was an extraordinary thing. Everybody thought it wasn't. It was actually eating food, cooking and eating food. And it was quite a convoluted structure where we all met on the same night, but in four or five different houses and according to a theme and all the rest of it. And I loved it. I mean, it was like planning a holiday. You know, I loved planning what I was going to cook. And
where's the risk in that? Someone doing a supper club?
No, the risk, exactly.
Like
I know it doesn't
upper class
sound
risk. Oh, I'm risking a supper club.
I don't think it sounds like a risk, but it is a risk because I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have dared.
Ah, yes.
I wouldn't have dared ask 25 of my half friends that I knew in the community if they wanted to be part of a supper club in case I looked too silly.
Yes.
So that, do you see what I mean? It's a very small risk.
Like a fire
risk,
starter in some way.
Yes,
somebody
exactly
who will start a movement.
So those kind
or
of risks. But
yes,
then obviously big risks as well. You
yeah
know, like jumping off mountains and things and or starting up businesses.
Have you done bungee jumping or jumped
no
off
thanks
mountains?
No,
thank you.
No.
Yes. So we're talking about micro, macro
risks. Yes,
I'm
not interested in all that physical risk.
No, quite right too.
No.
Stay safe. Inside the train on the way to Didcot.
It's all getting very, very sort of upper middle class. Anyway, better anyway, shut up.
Shut up. So now then, we're up to, this is where, I think there. It's my structure. I think this is the third influencing thing now.
No, I've done them all, haven't I?
In which case, thank you, we can move on to the two things that never fail to grab your attention. And this is squirrels, so can I throw a squirrel at
you? Yes, you can.
Whoa! Feel free to drop it, but this is squirrels, what never fails to grab your attention. Squirrels, whatever else is going on for you, Kate.
Okay, this one was hard. But I kind of, for some reason, I landed on, and this is a bit negative, I'm afraid, but adults talking to children. Like if I'm walking down the street and I hear an adult shouting at a child, I just can't not hear it.
Yes.
And
is that a mother's instinct or just a kindness instinct that's wanting you to stop it? Or
no, I think it's the person who's obsessed with childhood instinct.
Ah, yes.
I think it's the person who didn't like the way the teacher spoke to me at that school instinct.
So just a trigger that's
the
immediate.
Why is there this ridiculous power tussle between adults and children instinct? I think why do adults think that they can talk to children in a way they wouldn't dare talk to an adult?
Yeah.
All of that.
Yes.
So it just makes me go like that. A child crying makes me twitch as well, but that's more of a mother instinct, I think. I mean, the cafe downstairs is a terrible place for me. It's awful.
It's chaos down there. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, because
so there's a sense of justice in there as well about making sure everyone's treated kindly and justly, irrespective of their age.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Respect for children.
Respect.
Which, again,
respect, and just they need to be heard and seen. They're amazing things. And then they only like it for a little while, so make the most of it, you know.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
That's a wonderful squirrel. You're allowed a second squirrel now.
I got a second squirrel. Well, you know, the weather. It's impossible. Like, we sort of... I know we complain about the weather, and I don't really even mean that, because I don't particularly mind what the weather's doing, but I can't fail to notice what the weather's doing. None of us can we?
It's very English as well.
I was very literal, actually. Yeah. When you know, the question is... What is the question? Things that never fail to get my attention. And I thought, what never gets my... Well, every morning I think about the weather. Yes. So.
And there's no such thing as bad weather, it's just the wrong equipment. We know that.
Exactly, yeah. But it's...
I tried to do a very well-formed sentence there. I don't know if you heard that.
Sorry, I was still busy trying to work out my own, so we just weren't listening to each other in that moment.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'll start shouting at you in a minute.
Please do. Yeah. It's very unjust, but it's good.
I think the weather's a bit like a train. You know what I was saying about a train journey?
Yes.
I think the weather's a bit like that because it's just a constant, and the seasons as well. It's a constantly moving thing. It's always going to change. It's never going to stay the same, which is why I could never live on the equator. Anyway,
we've nearly shaken the foliage of the tree. The 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 final thing is a quirky... Now, the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you.
Yes.
Kate Cross, my beautiful egg.
Yep.
We couldn't know about you until you tell us.
Yeah. Well, I wish I had a tattoo, but I don't. this is really hard as well, mainly because I'm constantly telling everybody everything all the time, so there's nothing that hasn't been said. I didn't have to have an interview to get the job here. And if I had have done, I wouldn't have got it.
Wow.
I know, so I wouldn't, because I can't do interviews. Which is why I was terrified about this.
And I love the fact that when you were summoned to the Danny Moore office, that you worried that it was going to be a rollicking rather than...
Yeah, I know, it's awful, isn't
giving
it?
You the gift of...
God,
the gift of life in terms of curating
life
the venue. Yes.
It does.
And do you want to say a bit more about why you just know you wouldn't have got it? You've just been crap at interviews.
I'm just really bad at interviews. Like, I don't really like answering questions. Mm. But this was really tough.
But you still said yes. I feel the pain. Do it anyway. You're doing really well.
Yeah.
So we've shaken your tree. Hurrah.
Hooray.
Now in the structure, we stay in the clearing. We move away from the tree. And next, we talk about alchemy and gold, please.
So have we got to Reading yet?
We're near Reading, yes, we should be at Reading shortly. Okay. So this is alchemy and gold now. The idea being, the sort of metaphor here is, when you're at purpose and in flow, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
Yeah, this is really hard, this one, and I didn't know how to answer it. Give me an example of what other people have said.
It's when you're most at peace. So in my world, if I'm in a comedy improvisation show and the firework display is going off, time stands still. It's just a moment of just magic where I just don't worry. The rest of the world goes away and I feel completely contained within an alchemic moment.
Other than the train journey then, obviously.
Yes.
It's a little bit like the clearing. Cooking.
Ah, there you are. Yeah, sure.
Does that. It's not my clearing because I don't think when I'm cooking, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Or I don't... So the idea is... Well, I'm at my happiest when I'm having ideas.
Yes.
So I guess that's another bit of alchemy gold thing. It's like, yeah, I need to create space where I can have ideas, which is why I like going on train journeys. But cooking is just a lovely way of just shutting out all the noise because you've got an actual job to do.
Yes, something outside of your head, arm's length, with your hands.
Yeah, which is going to result in something nice, hopefully. Yeah, so that's always my sort of defragging place at the end of every day is the kitchen.
Lovely expression, defragging.
Yes.
At the end of the day in your kitchen.
Yeah.
That'll do for Alchemy and Gold. That's fine. Yeah, it's good. No right or wrong answers. It's all whatever you'd like to say. And now we've come through Alchemy and Gold. And next we're up to, I'm trying to remember exactly what happens next. We're going to award you with a cake, please.
Oh, good.
So this is a final storytelling metaphor. Which, do you mind if I bung this at you? So do you like cake, first of all?
Sort of. Not a lot.
Okay. Don't worry about that. So let's put a cherry on the cake instead.
Sorry, was I supposed to?
You can't give away cake sometimes. But the cherry on the cake is the final storytelling metaphor,
okay.
Where it's stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future? And what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself?
Yes.
It could also be, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Yes.
So stuff that sort of existentially got you on the right path. And we're ramping up, ultimately, to a bit of Shakespeare, where we're going to talk about legacy.
Speak
and how
yourself.
You most like to be remembered.
I'm not doing any Shakespeare.
I'll save the Shakespeare to the very, very end because of where else we're going.
Okay.
But so it's just to reconstruct that for you. Are you happy to just get
on
the open
I'll just do a few things, if that's all right.
Sure.
A bit of popcorn for you, if that's
all
right.
I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
That
was one I learnt last week when we were some artists in here and I heard somebody talk about popcorn and we went, what do you mean? She went, well, everything's just coming and going, non-linear.
Do a popcorn interpretation of the case.
So I'm going to give you a quote, which is one of my favourite quotes about theatre. I quite like theatre. I mean, I don't know if that's obvious, but, you know, I do quite like it. And this is from Tove Jansson, who wrote all the Moomin books. And it's from Midsummer Moomin, I think. And it goes, a theatre is the most important kind of house in the world because that's where people are shown what they could be if they wanted, what they'd like to be if they dared to, and what they really are.
Ooh.
And I like that.
We like that too. That's
good.
Lovely.
Yeah. So that's a beautiful quote, and that's what reminds me, well, all of us actually, what, you know, in our department, of why we do what we do. And you know, when we're looking at a play and making a play and in the business of, like, really trying to craft a piece of theatre, that kind of, you know, that arrow into the human condition is what really matters. Particularly, I think, in making work for children who don't have the lexicon yet to go with sort of big scripted, heavily texted or, you know, heavily political types of work. Not that I wouldn't do any of those things to a young audience, but I think what you're driving at is the thing that we have in common, which is being human. So that's why I like that.
Beautiful. And again, I'll stay with your popcorn.
Stay with the popcorn. Well, other things are just like sort of daily mantras. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're really funny because they contradict one another, the daily mantras. So, like, in the workplace, you know, for me, a daily mantra is fine isn't good enough. You know, just fine doesn't pass for me. What does done look like? Can we do better? You know, so there's that constant drive. But at the same time, we've got some quite funny ones, which are ones that kind of just let me off and stop me from being too hyper or whatever around that perfection. Perfectionism is not quite the right word, but anyway, let's use that word, perfectionism. One of them is, well, whatever, it's only a play, which is really good because it is only a play.
Yeah.
And lovely. You can get a little bit too up your...
So there's a hard taskmistress in there, but then there's something that lets you off the hook with
let
it's
you off
just
the hook.
A play with perspective.
Yeah. And there's another one that we've been using recently, which has gone down really well, and we've used it a lot, which is, it's okay because nobody's marking our homework. And so it's like we get to choose how we do this. It's like if we think this is right, then it's right.
Yes.
And nobody's going to tell us it's wrong.
By the way,
which harps back to, you know, my feelings about education. So there you go.
Yes. And by the way, I forgot to mention earlier on, which is linked. Thank you for saying that. When you were recommended and endorsed for your MBE, I read an article about you where you said, do you know what? The endorsement I was given was the best school report I'd ever been given.
Ooh, did I say that?
You said that.
So
there's something really factory default settings about school conditioning and childhood conditioning, even in your worry about is it good enough and is this enough? But
it's
I like
it's
the fact
a conflict
that ultimately,
and paradox, isn't it, all the time? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It's wonderfully paradoxical.
Yeah.
Lovely. We are ramping up to... any more popcorn, just before I...
No, I don't think I do, actually. No, that's it. That'll do.
Lovely bit of popcorn. And I'm going to give you a bit of Shakespeare in a minute, but just now there's a new construct which is called Pass the Golden Baton, Please. So... take the baton.
Yes.
And this is to just invite you.
Yes.
who in your world, in your network, now you've experienced this from within, would most appreciate, like, enjoy a good listening to in the show?
Right. Well, I can't guarantee whether this person will say yes or no if invited. And he's not world famous or anything like that, but then again, neither am I. But I want to recommend a gorgeous, wonderful, creative genius called Toby Thompson. Who I've known since he was a young teenager, because he first started to come to the Egg and sort of with sort of hair hanging over his face and sort of pretending he wasn't there, but sort of there. And then we started to hear him sort of gently rapping over his keyboard in the corner of the cafe and thought, oh, he's quite good with words. And then he started writing sort of full-length performance poetry. He was a complete education outlier, left every school in Bath, and then eventually went home, basically. Yeah. Taught himself how to be a poet. And we made a play with him six years ago called I Wish I Was a Mountain that has continued to... It did very, very well in this country and has subsequently spent 6 months in China, won an award in Philadelphia, is about to go to Canada and America and has just done 2 weeks in Ireland. I mean, it's just a very, very successful play, which anybody who watches it just loves. It's very, very moving, and he's a very, very unique human being. And I think you'll have a lovely time with him, and you will be in safe hands.
He feels like he'd be a privilege to interview, so thank you so much for recommending him. Thank you very much. And now, let's keep hold of the baton for now.
Yes.
Inspired by Shakespeare and borrowed from the Seven Ages of Man's speech, we're now ramping up to when all the world's a stage. When all is said and done, Kate Cross, MBE, how would you most like to be remembered? So this is your opportunity to talk about legacy. So how would you most like...
I don't think I answered this one.
To be remembered.
I haven't planned this one, so I don't actually know. How would I most like to be remembered? In the pub. Is that a cop-out?
Not at all. I'd most like to be remembered in the pub.
Having
Lovely.
A laugh, really.
Yeah.
You know, like having really good conversation with perfectly formed sentences and having lots of good ideas with a few other people. That's how I'd like to be remembered.
And as this has been your moment in the sunshine, in the Good Listening To show, stories of distinction and genius, you are both distinct and what you've done is ingenious in what you've created and curated here. But as this has been your moment in the sunshine, is there anything else you'd like to say, Kate?
Oh, no, I think I've said it all. I feel fully expressed. Thank you, Chris.
Ladies and gentlemen, there'll be an opportunity to ask some questions if you'd like to in a few moments' time. But can we have a round of applause? You've been listening to Kate Cross, MBE, the curator of The Egg. This has been the Good Listening To show. Thank you all.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.